Deutschlandfunk Kultur. Sein und Streit.
So ganz verlässt es einen in jüngster Zeit doch nicht, dieses Gefühl, dass sich da auf globaler Ebene gerade etwas zuspitzt. Ökologisch, militärisch, ökonomisch, menschenrechtlich, pandemisch. So sieht es auch der slowenische Philosoph Slavoj Žižek, genialischer Meisterdenker und Hofnarr der globalen Linken. Nun hat Žižek eine Analyse gegenwärtiger Verwerfungen und dröhender Finsternisse verfasst. Ein großer Wurf, der nicht nur eindringlich vor kommenden Katastrophen warnt, sondern auch neue Ausgänge in ein radikal neues Weltverhältnis freilegt. Paradoxien der Mehrlust, ein Leitfaden für die Nicht-Verwirrten, lautet der Titel des Werks. Seine Leitfrage lautet: Wie, wenn überhaupt, kann es mit uns modernen Menschen weitergehen? Na, wenn das mal kein Gespräch wert ist, herzlich willkommen bei Sein und Streit, Slavoj Žižek.
Vielen Dank, es ist eine große Ehre für mich, hier zu sein.
Herr Žižek, als wacher Beobachter der politischen Gegenwart, wie bewerten Sie die globale Lage auf einer Skala von 1 bis 10? 1 steht für alles in Ordnung, 10 für Alarmstufe Rot.
I can only give a very stupid answer. At the same time, 8 and 12, even more. That is to say, in some sense, if you look at all indications, although things are not so bad, economy is still progressing and so on, but we are obviously approaching a fixed point, which is some kind of global catastrophe at more than one level. What will be the consequences of artificial intelligence penetrating our daily lives? How will war develop, the world situation, immigration problem, global warming, and so on? And I think, here is my paradox, the right strategy to approach apocalypse, it's not to say, but we still have a choice, and so on, but to accept the apocalypse as a fact, in the sense that if we do nothing, if we just wait and see and let the system go on, we are lost. So in some sense, we should act in the sense to not just to take other options. This is a philosophical insight now, but in some sense to change even the past. We need a new approach to the entire view, our view of progress and so on. We need to change the past. I think this in Walter Benjamin's terms. The past as we know it, the past of gradual progress is bringing us to catastrophe.
Um ein Wort von Walter Benjamin aufzunehmen, könnte man ja sagen, die eigentliche Katastrophe besteht darin, dass sie nicht stattfindet. Oder anders gesagt, mit der Apokalypse ist es so, sie wird immer prophezeit, aber sie findet dann nie richtig statt. Und auch die Klarheit, die Offenbarung im Wortsinne der Apokalypse, die stellt sich eigentlich nie ein, oder?
Yes, I agree with the basic insight indicated by Benjamin here, which is that the way we await apocalypse, is apocalypse, is already in some sense part of the apocalypse because it transfixes us. It's clearly, I would even use here the Freudian term of Merlus or Mergenissen. We are fascinated by it. But I wouldn't quite agree that it never occurs. It never occurs now in the present. We are awaiting apocalypse and all of a sudden we become aware that we are already in apocalypse. It's the same as with Liebe, with love. You wait to fall in love and then it's never now. Now I'm in love. All of a sudden you discover, my God, I'm already in love.
So gibt es also eine Nachzeitigkeit der Erkenntnis. Und Sie sind ja als gewiefter Dialektiker, gehen Sie sogar noch weiter. Sie sagen, wir leben eigentlich bereits in einer postapokalyptischen Zeit. Und Sie sagen auch, die eigentliche Katastrophe hat schon stattgefunden. Diese Katastrophe sind wir, die modernen Menschen des fossilen Kapitalismus.
Yes, it's true. But nonetheless, I remain, at least in this aspect, an old-fashioned Marxist, in the sense that the only way out is through this catastrophe. Catastrophe still has for me something purifying, reinigend, so that catastrophe reduces you to a bare zero level, and this is what we need. We will need not to change how we behave, how we do, and so on. We will need to change ourselves in a fundamental way. For example, very briefly, just to mention artificial intelligence, the question is not we will dominate it, will it dominate us, and so on. The big question of artificial intelligence is, for me, we will survive it somehow, but how will it change the very basic meaning of what means to be a human being?
Und haben Sie da derzeit das Gefühl, dass Sie vielleicht auch mit dem neuesten Sprung, mit dem Chatbot, sich wirklich etwas ereignet hat, ein Ereignis im philosophischen Sinne, dass die gesamte Idee dessen, was es heißt, zu denken, zu sprechen, vielleicht sogar zu philosophieren, sich derzeit wandelt?
I am not such a pessimist here. As I already put it somewhere, what worries me is not that chatbots will be more intelligent than us and so on, but that in imitating or interacting with chatbots, we will begin to think, to act like chatbots. That's my big worry.
Aber das wäre ja gar nicht schlimm, wenn die Chatbots alles können, was wir auch können.
Yeah, but they cannot. And to put it very simply, one thing that I think is the main aspect of human creativity was designated already in the tradition of Deutscher Idealismus, especially, he's not one of them, but nonetheless, Heinrich von Kleist wrote a wonderful short text when he demonstrates with beautiful examples how all big new thoughts happen through mistake. You say more than you wanted, you say something wrong, and then you desperately try to find a way out and invent something new. I will really believe in chatbots when they will be able to do this. To do a mistake, to say something stupid, and then to invent something new to find a way out.
Das würde ja philosophisch bedeuten, dass die Fähigkeit, Fehler zu machen, viel mit Kontingenz, mit Zufälligkeit, mit einer spezifischen Form von Dummheit zu tun hat. Und Sie würden sagen, Sie glauben dann, dass Chatbots wirklich denken können, wenn sie mit Kontingenz produktiv umgehen können, auch mit ihrer eigenen Dummheit.
Ja, das ist das Problem. This is the problem. Chatbots in some sense are not stupid enough. All great things happen through contingency. I think that even the philosopher who appears the very opposite of this, Hegel, if you read his dialectical passages in Phänomenologie des Geistes closely, he presents a certain Gestalt des Bewusstseins, figure of consciousness, and then he theatralizes it, enacts it. Then something goes wrong, and then something new emerges.
Das ist eine sehr menschliche, die geistige Dynamik, können wir sagen. Was künstliche Intelligenzen auch nicht sein können, sie können nicht verwirrt sein, nicht confused sein. Ihr Buch trägt nun den Titel »Ein Leitfaden für die Nicht-Verwirrten« und eigentlich sagen sie, wir sind noch lange nicht verwirrt genug. Die Philosophen glauben immer noch, sie können diese Gegenwart mit konventionellen Mitteln verstehen und ihr Programm ist eigentlich das einer Begriffsfrustration. Sie wollen der Gegenwart zeigen, dass wir noch viel verwirrter sein müssen, bevor es besser wird.
Absolutely. We know so little. We don't have enough of this simple, good old transcendental self-reflection. What do you mean by this? Everybody speaks now, for example, about do chatbots and artificial intelligence in general, do they pose a threat to our freedom? But what do we mean by our freedom? Is it simply a free choice? Are we free if we take into account the new results of biogenetics and so on and so on? That's what I found so fascinating in all these new researches, which may appear problematic. Biogenetic, artificial intelligence and so on. They, in some sense, compel all of us to act like philosophers. That's beautiful. You must ask the basic question. Not just am I free, but what did I mean by questioning my freedom. Is freedom simply a freedom of choice and so on and so on?
Herr Zsirk, in Ihrem neuen Buch stellen Sie eine Diagnose, die sehr negativ ist, in dem Sinne, dass Sie sagen, sämtliche ideologische Angebote unserer Zeit sind Scheinangebote. Weder der Rechtspopulismus noch der religiöse Fundamentalismus, weder die woke Identitätslinke auf globaler Ebene noch der liberale Marktliberalismus haben verstanden, worin das Problem unserer Gegenwart liegt. Und deswegen können sie auch nicht angeben, wie wir aus dieser Finsternis hinauskommen. Ist das richtig?
Ja, okay. It is more complex, but my basic idea is a very simple one, that maybe I'm wrong, it's a radical thesis, but my thesis is that a kind of fetishist denial. You say something, but you don't take it seriously. It's part of how ideology functions today. We all talk about fanaticism and so on. But no, the main problem is this. An example that I give in the book. I hate immensely, I must say, all these Kunst Biennales, you know, Kassel, Venedig, yeah, and so on. Yeah. Why? Because if you look at their program hefte, you find the worst vulgar Marxism. Yes, against Eurocentrism, against colonial exploitation, we all serve capital and so on and so on. But it practically means nothing. Kassel and Venice Biennales fit perfectly how today ideology functions. To repeat my friend, although he is more conservative than me, but I have a great appreciation for him, Peter Sloterdijk, he proposed 30 years ago, I think, this formula of cynical reason. We know very well what we are doing, but we are still doing it. And this is something new. Okay, let me give you a personal example, which I like. It's an example of myself as a model zwangsneurotic, or obsessional neurotic. I all the time, as you may have noticed, talk not to achieve something. I talk so that nothing will happen. When I was personally in psychoanalysis, as you can imagine, I didn't give a minute to my analyst. I talked all the time. You know why? Because I was afraid that if I stop talking, the analyst will ask me the real question. So, the goal of my talk was to make it sure that nothing will really happen. And wasn't also an example of this, do you remember the Glasgow conference now 2 years ago about global warming?
Yeah.
All the big talk, practically nothing changed. This is for me the problem. Words are important, but the way we use them, we learned to use words, ideological concepts, in a performatively, if I may use this word, inefficient way. Even if they are radical Selbstkritik, they just allow us to go on. Another thing, you can insert
Herr Zsirk,
the question.
Darf ich nur ganz kurz hier einhaken, weil Sie werfen einerseits vor, dass das, was sich als nonkonformistischer Widerstand gibt, ideologisch der reinste Konformismus ist. Eine sehr gängige Vorwurf, auch an die globale woke Linke beispielsweise. Aber Sie gehen ja noch weiter. Sie sagen, wir bräuchten eigentlich eine Psychoanalyse der Gegenwart, aber die Gegenwart hat Angst, die wirklich wichtige Frage zu stellen. Deswegen quasselt sie die ganze Zeit. Das wirft natürlich die Frage aus, wie lautet die eigentlich wichtige Frage, vor der wir Angst haben?
It's this, what I was already talking about, this split between, on the one hand, empty talk, not empty in the sense that it's not true, but empty in the sense that it's not personally engaging. On the opposite end, what the situation is more complex. My problem with so-called fundamentalisms, but not only fundamentalisms, is that something is happening which I cannot but call ethical evil, ethisch böse. The model for me here is, of course, we all know it, you remember Heinrich Himmler's Posenrede speech in 1943.
Ja, diese grausame Rede, ja.
Yeah. Presents total annihilation of the Jews and so on, but he does something terrifying there. He knows what we are doing, what even we should do, is horrible, undermines our basic sense of compassion, decency, and so on. But he redefines courage. Courage means that when higher interests of your country or and so on demand it, you should be ready to do horrible, unspeakable things. And Putin is basically saying the same. Russia needs it. We have to do horrible things. He doesn't say it so openly at Himmler. Then even Trump, you remember he gave an interview half a year ago, I think, where he said the last elections were illegal in the United States. So he says we even have the right to violate the Constitution, to act violently, to save our society, and so on and so on. This idea of we are obliged to do horrors and true courage is to sell your soul to the devil for the benefit of your country.
Aber Herr Žižek, könnte man diese Figur, die ja eine grundmenschliche zu sein scheint, eine Art Aktivismus des Nihilismus nennen? Das heißt, eine extrem unethische Form, die sich gerade in dieser unethischen Form zu extremsten Maßnahmen, die sich auch im Zeichen des Widerstandes formulieren können, hinreißen lässt. Und ich habe das Gefühl, dass eine Figur, die Sie fürchten, dieser nihilistische Aktivismus ist, aber was Ihnen genauso wenig gefällt, ist der moralische Aktivismus. Das würde ja auf eine sehr komische Konsequenz führen, dass nämlich jede Form derzeitigen Aktivismus fehlgeleitet ist.
No. Here I'm much more modest. I don't think that we can do nothing. I support everything. I'm very opportunistic here. There are situations where, yes, it's better to do nothing. There are situations where total mobilization is needed. There are situations where small, precise acts are the best thing to do. I remember here my own youth under socialism. In the last decade, they didn't care about general ideology. If you wrote against communism, Marx, even against Yugoslav system, they didn't care. But if you criticized precise persons, if you want to change small legal regulations, that was the dangerous thing. But miracles happened. For example, in United States, I have a great appreciation of figures like Bernie Sanders. He demands quite realistic social democratic measures. If you compare Bernie Sanders' program with European social democracy half a century ago, he is more modest. But today, this is obviously too much for the system. But more radical measures will be needed. What do you mean by this? Look at what is happening in Iran. Slowly, maybe the regime will control it, but I'm talking from last September, this feminine rebellion.
Yeah.
It's a miracle, because although they sometimes use some European terms, feminism, human rights, it's an original explosion, part of the antagonism of their own society. And what this is the good feminism for me, not our politically correct one, which is divisive. There, great part of society, even the majority, spontaneously recognized that women, with this small, apparently modest demand, no obligatory hijab covering our hair, heads, and so on, is a condensation, eine Verdichtung for all that is wrong. So it was by fighting this, we are fighting against economic decline, against our other freedoms, against police terror, and so on and so on. Here is an example what can be done.
Das ist sicher ein sehr eindrückliches Beispiel. Und in Ihrem neuen Buch versuchen Sie ja auch Krisen zu benennen, in denen sich die Problemhorizonte unserer Gegenwart kondensieren. Zum Beispiel die Krise in Afghanistan oder die Krise der Pandemie oder auch die Krise des demokratischen Rechtspopulismus oder der Demokratie, die bedroht ist. Das sind Krisen, in denen sich die Gesamtkonstellation für Sie kondensiert und die deswegen einen diagnostischen Wert haben. Und was Sie eigentlich vorschlagen als radikaler Denker, klingt zunächst einmal gar nicht so radikal für mich. Sie fordern ein Vertrauen auf die Wissenschaft und deren Erkenntnisse. Sie fordern ein Anerkennen globaler Verwobenheit und wechselseitiger Abhängigkeit. Und sie fordern globale Institutionen auf universalen Werten und Vergemeinschaftung im globalen Sinne. Man würde ja sagen, das ist gar kein radikaler Vorschlag, das ist fast schon linker Common Sense.
Linker Common Sense, but with a twist. You know, that's why I supplement my analysis with this crazy term, Kriegskommunismus, War Communism. Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm not crazy. I'm not saying we need a new Central Committee, der SED or what to run things.
Auf globaler Ebene.
I explicitly oppose world state because I think this would have meant an unthinkable temptation of corruption. No, what I only think we need is some kind of global international cooperation which will be effective, not just moral appeals. Let me give you two examples, very brief, to make this clear. I learned from my friends in Japan, you remember a couple of years ago the Fukushima catastrophe, that for one day Japanese government was in such a panic, they thought that they will have to evacuate the entire Tokyo area, 30 million people. Where? In Japan it's not enough place. In a rational international order, you find a way, let's move them to East Siberia or whatever. You cannot solve such catastrophes locally, or even a better example. You remember two summers ago, I think, in northwest United States and in southwest Canada, Seattle, Vancouver, temperatures rose up to 50 degrees. It was a catastrophe. But you cannot blame them locally. They are not so bad in their eco politics. It was a global perturbance of air circulation around the Northern Pole. Everybody knows this. How do you fight this? For me, it's a matter of simple survival that we will have not to abolish market, but to control, regulate market the way as you do it in emergency states. You know who almost used the same example? Simon Jenkins, a British commentator, who said, apropos the ongoing crisis of National Health Service in United Kingdom, he said that we should treat it as a war. Mm-hmm. People are unnecessarily dying. We need some kind of war mobilization. And I don't know how it is in Germany. In my country, it's the same. At an emergency reception, you can wait up till 20 hours. The public system is falling apart. Here, obviously, we should still use market, but market should be regulated, coordinated through some stronger, not even only state with large public cooperation. I'm very traditional here. Yes, I gladly accept what you said. The problem is for me that people even know that this is needed, but the mystery is they don't do it.
Ja, das ist die Verstellung unserer Zeit, die ja immer ihr großes Thema ist. Wir haben jetzt mögliche politische Wege aus dieser sehr kritischen, fast kriegsähnlichen Situation, wenn ich Sie richtig verstehe, gesehen. Sie wären aber nicht der Philosoph, der Sie sind, wenn Sie nicht auch metaphysische, grundlegende, begriffliche Änderungen vorschlagen würden zu einem neuen, radikalen Weltverhältnis. Und der leicht technische Term, den Sie für dieses absolut gewandelte Weltverhältnis wählen, heißt subjektive Destitution. Im Grunde aber geht es, wie Sie schreiben, um eine spezifische Form des Abschieds vom modernen Subjekt. Worin besteht dieser Abschied?
Oh, here I would respectfully disagree with you, because what I call paradoxically, as I emphasize in the book, subjective destitution is not any kind of mystical reunion with the world, unity with the world, renouncing subjectivity. I think we need more subjectivity, subjectivity at its purest. The model for this is when your whole world, as it were, breaks down, the basic hermeneutic coordinates, you don't know where you are, At that point, your subjective identity is destituted, but you remain as a pure form, as an empty subject. Our situation today could be maybe best described, you know, by Descartes' famous, at the beginning of his Meditations, pessimist point of universal doubt. I know I am, but how do I know that?
Und ich muss alles, was ich bisher geglaubt habe, in Frage stellen, radikal, mich selbst entleeren in meinen Meinungen.
Yes, but at the same time, then he entertains the hypothesis of how do I know that the big other, the God, is not a malign genie, an evil geist. I think that our situation today is that we live effectively in a world where all the figures of the big other, up to a point, I don't trust science absolutely. Science cannot stand on its own. Science itself, social wisdom, religion, and so on. We should suspect all of them as figures of this malin genie, of the evil spirit. And that's the point of what Hegel would have called absolute freedom.
Herr Žižek, ich will nicht zu sehr insistieren, aber Sie doch gerne bei Ihrem eigenen Wort nehmen. Sie schreiben in Ihrem Buch, im Angesicht der Krisen besteht die Notwendigkeit, und ich zitiere, all das, was es für uns jetzt heißt, ein Mensch zu sein, zu opfern. Und das würde ja auch heißen, ein vernünftiges, denkbegabtes, selbstbestimmtes, wollendes Individuum. Das muss erstmal sterben oder sich entleeren, damit es weitergehen kann. Das schreiben Sie. Und das klingt für mich so ein bisschen wie der Aufruf, aus Angst vor dem Untergang Selbstmord zu begehen.
I think we need Selbstmord, collective suicide, but let me be very clear. A symbolic one, not a real one. A real suicide is for me always an escape, which avoids accepting that we cannot rely on any authority. So when you say about this Selbstmord and this symbolic emptying and so on, my point here is not to abandon rationalism. Although I write in a crazy way, I believe in argumentation and so on and so on. But okay, I will give you a concrete example, which will be maybe a good way to conclude because it will shock everybody. But it's Wunderbar. A real one. I read somewhere years ago that Nazis in concentration camps had a special torture device which was industrially produced. That's horrified me. Like, you know, those small things to crack nuts, you know. They produce them in a slightly different form to crash testicles, human testicles, to torture. It was industrially produced. So horrible. So I checked it up. I put testicle crasher in Google. You know what I got? 10 different sites offering this beautifully produced, the price is up to 500 euros, for sadomasochistic practices. You have 2 beautiful empty balls, you put testicles in, you can regulate how much you crash them, you have needles to put them in.
Sehr detaillierte Beschreibung, ja.
Yeah, but what I found breathtaking is how something that till a couple of decades ago we could only imagine as utter torture is now part of, okay, I wouldn't say ordinary, but massively available industrially produced machines which enable you special forms of sexuality. Now, this is for me part of a very sad indication. We live in the so-called permissive era. You know,
yeah.
Everything permitted. But at the same time, this permissive world is more than ever regulated censors. Yes, in principle, you can do whatever you want, but you know all those rules, consensual and so on, and you should do this, you should not do that. And an even more sad underlying motto or fact, just to try to enjoy, doesn't work. That more and more we can enjoy only through pain. That it must be pain to enjoy it. Now, What is happening here? The conservative conclusion is because we don't have enough traditional prohibitions. The function, as we already learned in the Bible, St. Paul's letters, the law is here as a call to be transgressed. So you need firm set so that you can normally enjoy its transgression. It's more complex. I don't believe this, but nonetheless, I think that this should give us to think, and that's my problem with wokeism and political correctness. It's on behalf of diversity, tolerance, and so on, but it's done in a way which is extremely intolerant, irrational. Nobody knows. Something all of a sudden is judged to be impermissible. It's intolerant and extremely divisive. You know.
Herr Žižek, wir sehen, da gibt es noch einige philosophische Nüsse zu knacken, um mal Ihr Beispiel aufzunehmen. Aber ich würde noch eine...
Ich hoffe nicht mit dem Testicle Crasher.
Das wollen wir wohl auch alle nicht hoffen. Aber ich würde noch mal nachfragen wollen, Sie sprechen von diesem notwendigen Breakdown der Selbstentleerung, die zum Beispiel in Formen totaler Verzweiflung, totaler begrifflicher Perplexität ist. Das sind meist negative Erfahrungen, die ein neues Weltverhältnis in diesem Sinne hervorbringen. Aber es gibt in der philosophischen Tradition und auch in der menschlichen Erfahrung ja auch extrem positive Erfahrungen, die diese Entleerung hervorbringen. Zum Beispiel das Erhabene, Erfahrungen unglaublicher Schönheit. Sie konzentrieren sich sehr auf das Negative. Könnte man nicht auch sagen, wir brauchen einen neuen Sinn für das Erhabene, für das Schöne, um diese Entleerung, die Sie fordern, hervorzubringen?
Absolut. But I would nonetheless like to quote here in einer of his poems Rainer Maria Rilke, who wrote there that Engel, beauty, the Schöne is a mask of the horrible. I think that Erhabene is precisely a way from a safe distance to experience horror. And I think that, and this was clear to Hegel when he tries to describe the innermost of subjectivity, he evokes the old mystical terms of the night of the world. Night of the world in the sense of total darkness and so on. My point is, and I think this is already Hegel's point, that we cannot simply overcome this into some happy progress. This always remains a threat. At the beginning of anthropology, Dritter Teil von Enzyklopädie, when Hegel talks about how, to put it in vulgar today's terms, how human intelligence emerged out of animal behavior, he says madness. He says that the original experience of Geist is to be without roots, in the emptiness, madness. And then he says, literally, he is more Michel Foucault than Foucault himself. He says that all our intelligence, reason, is a desperate attempt to control the core of madness. He says very beautifully, we don't have all to be mad, but we can only understand our reason as a defense against this radical night of the world negativity, against the threat of madness. What was for Hegel a high speculation is now our reality. We experience this madness everywhere.
Und doch sind wir offenbar auch Ihrer Ansicht nach noch nicht verrückt genug, sondern müssen an dieser Verrücktheit noch arbeiten und sie neu verstehen.
Yes, ich will doch but by verrückt, I'm not saying we should be more destructive or whatever. We should confront the danger of being verrückt. And we have to go through this zero point to get anywhere. Today, our view is, for me, philosophically and politically, too much like this, if you look at Ukraine. We want to help Ukraine, yeah, but we don't want to put too much in danger our relative welfare in Western Europe. No, we have to go to the end, not bombing Russia. I'm not crazy. I worry about peace, but in the sense that a way of life which was in some sense beautiful, European welfare state, is in big crisis. We will have to radically change it to survive.
Herr Žižek, was ja auch berührend ist an Ihrem Buch beispielsweise, Sie fordern ja, und Sie haben das auch gerade nochmal formuliert, eine spezifische Form von Alltagsheroismus. Und Sie sagen, es gibt diese Form von alltäglich positiver Verrücktheit. Sie sagen zum Beispiel, die Menschen, die in den Pflegeberufen und im Krankenhaus während der Corona-Krise aktiv waren, haben eigentlich das gezeigt. Sie haben sich in den Dienst einer Sache gestellt, sich extremen Gefahren ausgesetzt, ohne erst an sich zu denken, sondern sich in einer höheren Mission gefunden und sich in diese eingefunden, ohne sich als denkendes Subjekt allzu rational zu verhalten.
Absolutely, and it's not only this. That's why, because I have many friends there, I sympathize with Ukraine. You know, many leftists say that today's wars are abstract wars with machines decided up. But from what I know, from concrete people, I communicate with them, is that the Ukrainian defense is precisely what the leftist usually called people's war. It's not just the army. At the local level, when they are bombed by Russians, people organized hospital, people used drones that they had for fun, for spying missions over the Russian positions and so on. It's an ethical miracle what Ukraine is doing now.
Wenn ich jetzt Sie fragen müsste als letzte Gedanken, Sie sprechen auch von einer neuen Hoffnung, Sie sprechen auch von Verkörperungen dieser neuen Hoffnung, dieses neuen Weltverhältnis, einer positiven Lehre in uns. Wer ist denn derzeit die Gestalt auf der Welt, wo Sie sagen würden, der oder die verkörpert diese Haltung für Sie am eindrücklichsten?
I have some political sympathies in the world today, but I don't have one big ideal. I don't know how she really works, your foreign minister, Annalena Baerbock. But one small thing that I appreciated, I remember a debate at the beginning of Ukraine war, when our usual attitude, as already said, was, let's help Ukraine, but not too much so that we don't put in danger our welfare. Because let's be frank, that's my pessimist analysis. The fact that Ukraine resisted was an unpleasant surprise for us. Most of us secretly hoped, okay, Russia will take it, then we will negotiate, the crisis will be over. But what Frau Baerbock said beautifully is that instead of thinking in these terms, let's keep things as much as possible with us the same, just help as much as Ukraine, why don't we use Ukrainian crisis also to address other questions, like there is a problem with oil supply. Okay, let's use it to change our societies with regard to energy sources, with regard to agriculture, and so on and so on. I think that the properly Hegelian, even Marxist approach is to see a crisis always also as a chance for something new. Don't just think in the terms of local crisis, okay, let's contain that and go on the way we are doing. Or if I may conclude with another very important notion, which is now actual, that of I forgot the author who wrote a book with this title, Anti-Fragility, Anti-Fragilität.
Ja, das ist Nicolas Taleb, hat das geschrieben. Das
Taleb, Buch. Yeah. So, this is, I think, very actual today. Look, this was, for example, Gorbachev's mistake. He thought opening Perestroika, our system, Soviet, is anti-fragile enough that it will be able to integrate this change. No, it wasn't. Everything fell apart. China did it better. And what we need today is to go to the limits of the anti-fragility of our system. The problem is how to change the system, not that it remains the same, but that we survive. We should make a step towards anti-fragilität, which means push the system to the limits, the system of what we appreciate, human rights and so on and so on, but really push it to the limits, to step out of this conformism, because even now, with all the talk about Russian nuke bombs, we basically are not ready to seriously change things. So my pessimism is we will need stronger catastrophes to awaken us.
Die Grenzbereiche aufsuchen, push it to the limit, das ist nicht nur ein Rat an die Gegenwart, das ist ja auch eine Mission Ihres Philosophierens und wie produktiv und einsichtsreich das sein kann, das haben wir heute wieder gesehen. Herzlichen Dank, Slavoj Žižek, dass Sie heute hier waren.
Es war wieder eine große Ehre für mich und ich danke Ihnen.